People talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and causing that heat. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some swirly guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a part of that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on LightResistanceRadio.com, and lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening in the European heartland this morning. big news yesterday, that Saturday, there was a big an anti-immigration rally called by a group that has made some name for itself. It's largely anti-Muslim, for Vancouver. Now, reports are sketchy, but our friend Brian Rue was there, and he eventually had to be escorted away by police. He made it quite clear that he was anti-immigration and a dedicated free speecher, and anti-free speech people were cursing at him and yelling insults at him, and the police eventually escorted him away and told him if he returned he'd be arrested for creating a disturbance. I'm not laughing at Brian, I am laughing at the politicized police. Rather than doing their job, standing between the two sides, the police take the easy way out and attack and persecute white people. Well, that's about what you'd expect from a state that no longer supports our people, but basically is in the hands of the predator. Meanwhile, several thousand anti-racist people gathered anyway, They made quite a noise, the mayor of the city, who is involved with a Chinese populist pop singer, whose mother's got all sorts of legal problems back in China, and actually this woman's in China as well. He condemned the march as a racist, even though it hadn't occurred. And Prime Minister Trudeau, who was in Vancouver to attend, that's right, the Gay Pride Parade. Yeah, he goes from Gay Pride to parade. You wonder, this is the Prime Minister of the country. Does he have nothing more important to do? Well, as a matter of fact, no, he doesn't, because he's not protecting the borders. His Muslim Somali Somali refugee immigration lawyer, minister of immigration. That's right. This Somali import. His our immigration minister. He's protecting the border. Well, the border, not. Anyway, Trudeau praised the anti-racist protesters. One of the big mysteries was there, in fact, other than Brian Roux, the promised anti-immigration protest? We don't know. Brian Roux was there, and he didn't see it. I have my considerable doubts about groups that have very little on-the-ground support announcing they're going to have a protest. The anti-racists come out and have a big old hoo-ha, and it actually makes our side look weak. I think far better would be to quietly have a protest and then tell the press at the last minute, rather than to announce big stuff. See, the problem is, with groups that don't have a lot of members there, just putting out a notice on the internet or putting it out on Facebook doesn't ensure you numbers. I mean, I've been organizing protests since I was 18. I know that unless you know the members of your group, you can't be sure who's going to come out. That's just an old given. If you know the members of your group, and you can go down the list and say, John, are you coming? And even then, I found you've got to discount the numbers by a little bit, because some people say, "Oh yeah, 100%, you can count on me." Well, they don't come on, or they intend to come out, but they don't show up in the end. It's not good enough just to have promises. Now, how much more so when you actually don't know the members of your group? You actually don't have a group. You've got some Facebook followers. Some of them are for real and good. Some are spies. Some are what I would call keyboard commandos. They'll talk a good fight, but you'll never see their sorry butt out at a protest. And then, of course, not everybody can go out to a protest. They don't may not all live in the area, and that's a very big concern. They may be elderly. They may be in a sensitive job where they can't get their mug in the paper. Anyway, while I don't criticize anybody's efforts, it would appear that our side didn't do too well in Vancouver. Brian Roux has a fantastic video of himself. He got a lot of publicity, but that's personal. It's not really it really doesn't assist the cause. Anyway, I was a bit disappointed by this, Brian has a great report, which is what we have up on the internet, and he will have some videos up on it as well. Much more positive was what happened in Quebec City today. Good news and bad news. I'll give you the executive summary. Uh, the executive summary is, about 200 people of a group called La Meute, which is the kind of a slang term in French for the wolf pack, and they had called a rally for Quebec City today, and they were protesting the policies of the Quebec and particularly the federal government in allowing in hordes of illegals, many of them from Haiti, but not only from Haiti, these are illegals, what they're doing is. They're doing is pouring across the border illegally. They don't go through the border crossing, they just pour across and nothing happens. Well, actually, worse than nothing happens. The Canadian Army has been constructing some sorts of shelters for them. They've been put up in the Olympic Stadium in Montreal at huge expense of the Quebec taxpayers. And the RCMP, that's the police, incidentally, who should be protecting this border crossing, do nothing. Why not? What'd you say? Build a fence? Yeah, duh! Why not build a fence? No. What do? Well, they assist them. They help them with their weighty luggage. And that's what it is, weighty luggage. Many of these people are, you see pictures of them, and it's a disgrace. There they are with nice modern looking recent vintage suitcases, recent vintage suitcases. And we're told many of them have pockets full of money, great, nice-looking clothes. These are not the wretched of the earth. In fact, they're people who've been in the States for a number of years, many of them from Haiti, and they've been told by Donald Trump that they might, not for sure, might have to go back to Haiti after having a seven-year stay in the U.S. And I say they're illegal. They are. The agreement we have is that if you show up in the United States and you want to make a refugee claim, you have to make it there, not in Canada. Similarly, if you show up in Canada, you can't skedaddle across the border and make the claim in the United States. So you may well say, well, what's the problem? They're coming across the border illegally. And you see, they don't go through the border checkpoint. It would be a little different there. If they went through the border checkpoint, they would be told on the spot, well, you can't make a refugee claim here, you'll have to go back. Now, I don't believe they're actually deported at that point, but that's for sure. They will be. But if they cross illegally, and you wonder, we then have to pretend, well, we don't know where they came from. Now, I know this violates common sense, and the law really, in many cases, is an ass. It really is. But we have to pretend, well, we don't know where these folks came from, and then they say, well, I'm a refugee. Well, all sorts of goodies kick in. They immediately become our ward. That's right. They become our problem. We have to feed them. We have to shelter them. We have to medicate them. If they want to learn, improve their English or French, we have to do that. Learn a bit of a job skill because they don't have any? Have with that too. In fact, we really are the good time had by one and all, because they're guaranteed a refugee hearing. Well, that'll take, you know, a couple of years. And if it doesn't go their way, they can appeal, and, well, then so it goes. They can be here for 5 years. mooching off the taxpayer. See, the present system is set up not to work. The government doesn't want to protect the borders. In fact, there is a conspiracy at the highest levels by all parties. They want to replace the European founding settler people of this country. That's the blunt bottom line about this. They want to replace us. And they don't much care how. Come in legally, yeah, that's okay. Come in illegally, okay, well, we'll go through a bit of a show, but we're not really seriously trying to keep you out. Yeah, some of them will be sent back eventually, of course. But the overall trend continues. Well, anyway, back to what happened in Quebec City. A group called La Meute, which is the pack or the wolf pack, announced it today that they were going to have a protest. I'm sorry, they announced that they would have a protest today. I shouldn't say they announced today. This was announced some time ago. So they did. And of course, there was a huge anti-racist turnout of violent thugs. They threw chairs. They assaulted people. They assaulted people attending, including a man who's got to be in his 50s. And what was his crime? Flying the having a copy of the Patriots flag from the rebellion of 1837. In other words, hardcore, good old fashioned French Canadian. Well, he's an older gentleman, I'd say in his 50s. And he was beaten, his face is bloodied, and he's probably stunned. He's sitting on the ground, being ministered to by some others. You've got to wonder at these people, these terrorist punks. In the end, though, the protest went on, and it succeeded. Now, not without some problems, of course. The police perhaps didn't have the numbers or whatever, but they had to keep the patriotic or nationalist protesters in an underground garage for a period of time, and then they were able to eventually march away, and they felt it was a big success. This is a report. And here it is. This is partly the news report from the CTV, and partly a report from a person who was there, and I'll get into that in a sec. And violent Antifa street thugs attacked immigration protesters today in Quebec City, but in the end, the march organized by a group called La Meute proceeded. CTV, that's the Canadian Television Network, reported. Hundreds of members of a far-right group marched to protest illegal immigration in Quebec City on Sunday, but were delayed by several hours by far-left protesters who tried to shut them down by force. You see, where is the violence coming from? It's not the right, it's the George Soros-funded radical left. La Meute had a permit to protest and planned to march at 2 p.m., but was confronted by hundreds of left-wing protesters, some calling themselves anti-fascist or Antifa. After police attempted to allow the Patriots' march to go ahead, left-wing protesters, some wearing face coverings, of course, launched fireworks, lit fires, and lobbed bottles and chairs. They also attacked members of the media. Police quickly declared the left-wing protests illegal, citing violence and vandalism, but many protesters remained. The nationalist group waited inside a government building until the standoff ended. At least one person was arrested. Namit proceeded to march around 6 p.m., carrying signs that said things like, "It's not racist or xenophobic to want to preserve quality of life and the safety of our country." Others held signs that referenced free speech. Namit claims that it does not discriminate based on race, but is opposed to illegal border crossings. The RCMP intercepted 3,800 asylum seekers crossing the border between the U.S. and Quebec between August 1st and 15th, after intercepting 3,000 in July. Well, intercepting, 3,800 people pour across the border in 45 days, and they can't stop them. They can't stop them. They won't stop them. They won't stop them. And that is the criminal part of it all. They won't stop them. Anyway, that is the fundamental point. 6,800 people in 45 days. If they can't secure that border, the government ought to resign. But they don't want it, because the bottom line is they don't want to secure the border. They want our replacement. Replacement by immigration invasion. Anyway, this is the report. A very interesting report for a person who was actually on the scene. There was a political demonstration today in Quebec City by a group called La Mut. Mut is French for pack or wolf pack. I live in the region, so I decided to try to join their anti-immigration march near the provincial legislature building, despite my not being an official member of the Facebook group called La Mut. I tried, but I couldn't get in since the place was blocked by left-wing protesters who knew of the location of La Mut's rallying point in the basement of a parkade. La Mut's Facebook publicly said they would meet in the basement at 2 p.m. I looked at the Antifa Facebook, and they were having a simultaneous rally at 2 p.m. about half a mile away. That's kind of the background. I waited outside the parkade for a good time to enter the basement to meet La Mut, and saw about five La Mut members entering with their flags and the paw print t-shirts. The paw print, of course, is for the wolves. However, my waiting for a good time was a bad idea, as a whole group of impatient Antifa protesters arrived there at about 1:50. There were so many that Quebec City Police could not hold them back, it appears. It looked as though there were three types of Antifa. One, people who weren't afraid to show their face. Young anarchists whose faces were covered with bandanas, henceforth I call them bandanas. And three, communists with their red flags. And that would accord with pretty much what I've seen. The various groups did not seem to have a central leader, but were obviously united in their ideology. I saw banners for open immigration and anti-capitalism. The usual unholy alliance and sympathizers tagged along. Faced with the likelihood of not being able to join La Mut protest, I just sat and mingled with the anti-FOP counter-protesters and watched, trying not to gather too much attention to myself, hoping for a later opportunity to join La Meute people, but in vain. At one point, I asked in French some passing La Meute members if I could march with them, but they didn't respond, understandably a little concerned about getting attacked by the bandana wearers who were shouting at them just meters from me. At that point onward, I was definitely targeted by the bandanas as a possible right-winger, although in the confusion, some of the distant Antifa may have thought I was just a blogger, wannabe journalist, or just stupidly curious. At one point, the bandanas were ripe for violence against me and started yelling, "Fuck off," but a hefty policeman with a holstered gun protected me. If not, I might have been in a fist fight with the Antifa, or worse, being far outnumbered. Being around 50 years old, the youngsters were maybe a little hesitant to attack an older man, but it was close. I didn't leave, though, since I'd spent 2 hours getting to the location, and I wanted to see what happened when the protesters would meet the counter-protesters. I didn't travel all that way for nothing. I was mostly looking at my cell phone or on a set of cement steps, almost like a middle-aged man minding his own business on a summer day, looking at the news. This is an eyewitness, a report from the protest in Quebec City today by the nationalist group called La Meute, or the Wolfpack. I did not see have a god's eye view of everything that went on, viewed from every street, but I gather that La Meute's gathering was very small. I estimate there were about 200 people, and they were far outnumbered by various Antifa protesters. La Meute claimed around 600 followers in the basement of the barricade, but I cannot confirm that. While I was there, I saw a few events that were not reported in the media. One, these are some of the events that do not appear to have seen the light of day in either the CTV or CBC. Both of these are television reports. Some La Meute members were leaving the basement of the parkade and were heckled by bandanas from a hillock above the street. The La Meute people, two men and one young woman, were departing from the rallying point, it seems they had some signs for the planned La Meute march, but the signs were blank, and they had no writing on them. One bandana threw a wooden stake downwards toward the three La Meute members. The stake was hefty enough, around 2 inches by 2 inches, and around 4 feet long with an angled tip. If the stake had been thrown with any more force or accuracy, it could have seriously injured someone or have taken out an eye. Fortunately, the stake hit the pavement and only skidded toward the three La Meute people. The bandanas were yelling, "Fuck off," at them. Well, they were really intelligent protest, eh? The La Meute woman shouted back at them in French that she would get her revenge someday. Many of the bandanas had English accents and were either from the Anglophone communities in Montreal or from outside the province or even the country, our observer suggests. One short bandana was a college-age woman. She had a black satchel filled with what sounded like empty beer bottles rattling around, ready to pitch at police or La Meute members if needed. I didn't ever see her throw any of the bottles, but she was there with her satchel and nervous with uncertain flight or fight eyes. The bandana types were dressed mostly in black pants, black t-shirts, and black bandanas, incidentally. The bandanas were hopping around and chanting and very restless, almost like a group of hooting chimpanzees. Oh, he's got his way with words, this lad. Spoiling for battle. They constantly went from location to location and hopped from guardrails down to the sidewalk that I was on. At one point, they went around the parkade building and disappeared from my view for about 30 minutes. I find it curious that despite the fact that the Antifa vastly outnumbered Lamut, I saw fear in her eyes. Perhaps a little fear of the police, but just a little fear maybe from the fact that there could be a confrontation with Lamut. I speculate, he says. A third, perhaps the most interesting event to me was a passerby who went by the Antifa at the wrong time. I did not see them doing the act, but when the man passed by me, his face was covered with black ink. It looked like the kind of ink that one can wash off, as water-soluble, so at least they did not throw permanent dye on the man's face. A group of reporters descended on him and asked him questions. He was in his late 40s, well-groomed, white, and had a salt-and-pepper beard. He had black trousers and a purple dress shirt. He told the reporters he was not a member of Lamut, and he was just visiting the Quebec area. It seems the Antifa threw some ink on him from above as he passed on the street below. Perhaps they mistook him for a wealthy man, which is almost as bad as a racist in the communist size. One of the Antifa medical types gave him some Kleenex or wipe so he could get rid of it, wipe off the paint from his face. I'm not sure if he was from the Lamut or not, but if he wasn't, then the Antifa got a little carried away on that innocent guy. At around 2:30, a male sympathizer with Lamut tried to get inside of the police blockade. Remember, I was viewing him from inside the enemy lines, so to speak. But the police pushed him back with much force, seemingly concerned for his safety or because he was a late arrival. I learned from the news that the Lamut march... This is not actually not correct. The bandana seemed to have designated medical staff with red tape in the form of a cross on their shoulders, a designated quasi-medical corps among the Antifa. One of the women had some antiseptic napkins in a fanny pack and probably some bandages if necessary. In the news, I saw a picture of a different woman with a Red Cross type of colored tape on her shoulder, so there was more than one of these medical helpers. The quasi-medical staff lends an air of legitimacy to the organization, an organization to the Antifa, despite their violent bend. The protesters were overwhelmingly young and white, guess about 97% white. These are the Antifa protesters. One bandana leader was a college-aged man with piercing blue eyes, almost like an actor's eyes. When he spoke French, it was with a North American English accent. So, it's a very interesting write-up. If you'd like to get this write-up, just email me at paul@paulfromm.com. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on whiteresistanceradio.com. I'll play a Dwight Yoakam's tune in honor of the battles that we've been having to protect the Confederate memorials. And this is Dwight Yoakam saying, "I Sang Dixie."
I asked Dwight myself to sing this song because I liked it so much. It's a song that he wrote, and in fact, it was number one after Streets of Bakersfield, and I think it's a great song, and I know you heard it, but I don't know if you heard it quite like this. It's just him and his guitar, and that's the way I asked him to do it. And
that's
called Dixie.
That's Buck Owens introducing him.
You need to listen really close to the words because it's really a magnificent song. Quite ready.
Thank you, Buck. Actually, I wrote this after I'd been in L.A. a few years, and I'd been out there. My brother had come out to visit, and we were wandering around Hollywood one night and saw some stuff go on that kind of disturbed both of us. And a week or so later, I was home, and I started writing this. And it turned out to be a pretty good one for me.
Number one, pretty good.
I sang Dixie, yeah, she died. People just walked on by, as I cried. Bottle had wrapped up in the bullies' rebel cry. So I sang Dixie. He said, "Away down yonder in the land of cotton, old times are as rotten as they are on this damned old LA street." take it slow back home to Dixie. I sang Dixie as he died. People just walked on by as I cried. Bottom had run up him above his red devil cry. So I sang Dixie. He said, listen to me, son, while you still can, run back home to that southern land. Don't you see what life here has done to me? They closed those old gray eyes and fell limp against my side. No more pain. Now he's safe back home in Dixie. And I sang Dixie as he died. People just walked on by as I cried. The bottle had run up him with all his red devil cries. I sang Dixie as he died. Yeah, I sang Dixie as he died.
The wife is your son. Great John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, here's another one by Dwight. Turn it on, turn it up, turn me loose.
Driving me lonely.
turn me loose.
And that's Dwight Yoakam, and one of his best there, Turn Me Loose. And why don't we do this one with Buck and Dwight, The Streets of Bakersfield. That's, of course, the stomping grounds and hometown of the great Buck Owens, or I should say the late great Buck Owens. And that's Buck Owens Dwight Yoakam, The Streets of Bakersfield. Of course, one of the main centers of country western music in the United States. Of course, Bakersfield, going back to the time of the Okies, or the Oklahoma people, folks from Oklahoma that went there during the Dust Bowl days of the Depression, and settled in and around in the farm country around Bakersfield, California, and brought their music. And of course, over the years, that music developed. And that's of course Dwight Yoakam and Buck Owens, who did so much for music. Just got an interesting a bit of information from Sydney White. Now, Sydney White is a lady who's been a long-time lecturer at the University of Toronto, I should say the University of Toronto Free School. That's a kind of a collective. And she has, for I think a quarter of a century, taught a course on Monday nights during the regular school year on propaganda, studies in propaganda. And I actually met Sydney several times, but she was at the memorial last Wednesday in Toronto for the late Holocaust skeptic and publisher Ernst Sundel. Anyway, this is what she just sent my way, and it's rather upsetting. The transgendered threatened protest at, and Jordan Peterson is canceled out of Ryerson. Now, Ryerson's a university in Toronto. And she says here, Charlottesville. Unite the Right was backed by the ACLU. The speakers were booked and approved months before. They were given permission by the federal courts. Soros money paid for the riot with the Antifa, so the Republican speakers could not be heard. One of my students phoned me from Charlottesville and told me it was all actors in Antifa. Here in Toronto, Professor Jordan Peterson was booked to talk at Ryerson last Thursday, and that would be the that would be the 17th. Let me think. Yes, the 17th. There was violence threatened by the transgender group, so it was shut down. It was so Orwellian. It's so Orwellian now that anyone who desires a debate is called a Nazi. So I'll be talking most of the fall on censorship, where it comes from, and who is making the money on it, and what is the real goal of the perpetrators. I think the lectures will start around the middle of October. And that really is shocking. See, it's a failure on the part of particularly the universities. You know, the universities, the thinking has long been they're supposed to be outposts of freedom of speech. Where freedom of speech and debate were protected. there's something wrong on two levels. First of all, the transgender, like the Antifa, the other groups that have ranged against our society, the pro-immigration lobby and so on, of course not every one of them, but have regularly threatened and in some cases used violence. The JDL, the Jewish Defense League, did that for years against Aaron Zundel. When he first went to court in 1984, they and their allies would gather in front of the court, and the defense team, that would be Doug Christie, his wife-to-be, Kelty Zubko, Ernst Zundel, various other members of the defense team and supporters, would have to shove, in some cases, push and fight their way through a group of heckling, screaming, pushing, violent Jewish protesters. It was always struck me as bizarre. They had Ernst Zundel where they wanted him, in court. Well, why would you prevent him from going there? I mean, obviously in the end he'd have to go, but why don't you make it difficult? You want him there. The JDL would go on later. A bomb was put behind her in Sundel's place, a small bomb in the mid-80s, I believe. A bomb was sent to Ernst and to several other people. And we know who did it, a man by the name of Babarash and a colleague of his. The RCMP were all over these terrorists. And yet, on the eve of their trial, the charges were stayed. That is, the Crown withdrew them. Why? Because they did not want to provide disclosure, because it would, that's to the defense, because it would imperil our relations with some foreign security. I wonder who that could be. Anybody think it might be the Paraguayans? Later, in 1995, Ernst Zundel's home was the object of a massive firebomb attack, an incendiary device that did $400,000 worth of damage. And the head of the Jewish Defense League, Irv Rubin, claimed responsibility for it. this is a major
a major way of attacking free speech. Well, now, of course, the cultural Marxists, the revolutionaries who want to change our immigration policies, restrict free speech, promote the agenda of the sexually weird, that's the LGBTQ, XYZ, transgendered, non-binary, you know, just the sexually mixed up. What they do is they threaten violence. And this is I now switch my focus back to the establishment. Why is the correct response not in place? And the response would be, if we will not give in to threats of violence. The transgendered threaten violence. Well, are there no police? Are there no campus police? Or is this what is sometimes called the heckler's veto? We don't like that speaker, so we're going to come and be violent there. Well, the response should be, well, okay. If you are violent and you're a student, you'll be expelled. If you're not a student, we will charge you with trespass to property and any violent or any additional acts that you might have performed. No, it will not be tolerated. You see, all that has to be done, and this has worked in the past in other instances, all that has to be done is a spirited defense of freedom. You let it be known, no, we're not going to give in. You make threats. Well, first of all, if we can catch who is actually making that threat of violence, then they should be charged additionally for threats. But, you know, it all comes down to courage. You know, and that's what it comes down to. Courage and belief. Free speech will prevail. Now, if that is the attitude of the institution, then it will prevail. If it's not the attitude of the institution, then, of course, this provides just a good excuse. That happened with a lecture that was supposed to be given by American journalist and conservative Ann Coulter a few years back at the University of Ottawa. She was supposed to speak, and the various radical feminists, anti-racists, anti-free speechers promised they would shut it down, there'd be protests, and so on. Once again, instead of organizing proper campus security, and if necessary, coordinating with the local police, setting up perimeters, for instance, people coming to the lecture, you know, we'll get in this door, people that want to protest can stand outside the building, wave their signs, or do their dance, or whatever. Instead, the university collapsed, or caved in, citing security concerns. Well, that's the last refuge of the idiot, or the coward. And you know, it teaches a vile lesson, and the vile lesson is that make enough threats, and the institution will cave in. Well, that teaches a very, very bad lesson to people, and the lesson is that if they make threats, they'll get their way. So all you have to do is shut down a speaker you don't like, is threaten the institution. Oh boy. You have that speaker, there's going to be trouble. Instead of the institution coming back right back at you and saying, oh yes, well, if you cause trouble, you're going to have trouble. As I suggest, if you're a student, you'll be expelled, you know, if you resort to violence. And if you're not a student, well, you're going to be asked to leave the property, and if you don't do that right smartly, you will be arrested for trespass. Now, how do you like them apples? And you know, courage begets courage, and cowardice begets retreat. Once the enemy smells blood, they go for it. You know, I mean, they try to work out the tactics that will work. I mean, do threats work? If threats work, well, they'll make them. If they don't, they might try something else. The only answer to people like this is tough resolution. No, you'll not get away with this. If you try to perpetrate violence, you will be stopped.
Now, that's, of course, not the message that Grierson has sent out. Jordan Peterson, incidentally, is a professor of psychology at the University of Toronto. He's made all sorts of YouTube videos. You might want to check them out. He's a tough opponent of cultural Marxism. He's an outspoken opponent of the LGBTQ agenda, particularly the latest wrinkle of nonsense, and that is the demands that everybody has to play into the mental illness of the transgender. So if that transgender is actually a male but it's trying to be a female, we've got to call the creature she or her, and vice versa. If it's a female thinking it's a male, we've got to call the creature he or him. Well, Jordan Peterson said he won't. He said, I will address students and others by the proper pronouns of the gender they appear to be. You look like a woman, I'll call you she or her. You look like a man, I'm going to call you he or him. You may think you're the opposite sex, or you may think you're a gerbil today. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to be playing party. I'm not going to be drawn into your mental fantasies. And I like that. Well, of course, he's drawn an awful lot of flack and criticism for. Anyway, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back for you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do. And where did this thing go? With the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.